tuning into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Dude looks like a lady!
Welcome to the AfterBuzz Bates Motel After Show.
Woo-hoo!
That is the dulcet tones of
Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler.
I don't think is my mic on?
I can hear you.
I can hear you.
All right.
Yes, your mic's on.
Steven Tyler and Aerosmith singing "Dude Looks Like a Lady," which is referring to a little man we know as Norman Bates.
Yes.
He didn't wear the dress, but he wore the robe.
Yes. Now we'll get to that because there was a prediction about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You had a hard prediction that we'll see the dress.
Yeah.
Dress
my week. Prediction was right. It's all I'm saying is that I was right.
Close. Mine was wrong, but yours was not right.
Yours isn't necessarily wrong yet.
That's right. See?
Yeah. Sometimes the bigger predictions take a little bit longer to unfold.
Yes. You know, it was definitely wrong, Nando.
Why was I wrong?
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't even remember my predictions.
Gunner's
I'm trying to hold on to them.
That was your prediction.
Gunner's, Gunner's a goner. Well, we haven't seen him yet. So, definitely is a goner.
Officially, he's gone from the show.
Officially, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Dua Casey.
Hello, hello.
I'm also joined by Nando Velasquez.
Yeah, thanks.
And on the phone shortly, we're going to hear from not Nestor, but we will hear from Joe Sanfilippo. Nestor joined us last week, and that was really great of him, and some really great insight into the episode he directed. Marissa's in the booth. Hi, Marissa.
What's up, guys?
Nestor teased that on and off the air that this was a really great Vera Farmiga performance. He also teased that this is probably his favorite episode, one of his favorite episodes.
It was good.
And it delivered. It delivered. I think it was expertly directed. No offense to Nestor 5, which is well done.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was superbly acted, and I think we got a lot of good. We got a lot of meat. We got a lot of food on our plate on this one, right?
And it's so funny that you said that because I actually wrote a meat and potatoes episode.
Yeah,
that's
we got the meat and the potatoes. We got and the eggs for breakfast as Mother Norma was cooking. So lots to unpack. I think we have a bit of a short show today because we have an event to go to, which we'll talk about later.
Oh, but, that's exciting.
I think we may or may not get to meet Vera Farmiga today, and Joe's going to kill himself if he's not part of it. But we may have an event at Universal lot where we get to meet Vera and Carlton. So we'll let you guys know about that if that happens.
Oh, I'll tell you all about it next
week. Yeah, so it should be great. In the meantime, Flippo, are you on the phone?
I am.
How you doing, sir?
Living the dream,
okay. We may or may not be able to meet Vera Farmiga later, and so I would imagine you would kill yourself to be there, even though you're not here.
Oh, I will be there.
I know, right. I bet you will, you MF. So listen, great episode here. Like I said, lots to unpack. Let's start with where we left off in episode 5 with Norma storming off. And Norman having, you know, a real sort of meltdown at the end of that episode, you know, really, really melting down, and which is ironic because he was so calm and so supportive of Dylan's decision, and him and Dylan went to get in there together as brothers, and they went in there as men to discuss this with their mom, and then Norma's meltdown. Well, I'll say this. Norman didn't take the news very well.
No.
And Norman didn't take it very well either.
No. And it's funny how it was very similar how, you know, Norma is very reactive and now Norman was very reactive. He wanted to do a good thing. But then the second he realized that, you know, it didn't have a very good outcome, it's like, well, I didn't really think this through. What would have happened if it didn't go well?
Exactly.
And so he literally cracked.
Well, and he cracked some dishes too. That was probably like, I felt like that was a very involuntary response. I mean, that was as aggro and as scary as we've seen Norman. I mean, Freddie Highmore was really going for it on that one. Let me start. Flippo, you're on the phone. What did you think of this episode, sir?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. You know, this show almost never goes wrong for me. And I love that we're seeing, I mean, that's the whole point of the show, is to explore how Norman broke. And where he broke, and make it all plausible and play out, and of course make it entertaining and fun. And this was a big one. This was the first time we saw him fully dressed as mother, and you know,
well,
telling
half dressed his mother. There's no wig, no wig, no dress, but a bathrobe. He was halfway there,
but the persona was full on.
I'm not sure what he's wearing underneath, but I would imagine it was nice. I imagine it was something pretty.
Right.
But it was you know, and he was telling Dylan, I think, for the first time, like, I don't like that person. I don't want to feel these feelings. And you really start to see the complete split, which I thought was so well done. And so and then you see, also we see Norma have her complete splits. You see what she's going to do. She's completely reinventing herself and then stops herself halfway through.
Yeah. Nana, what do you think?
I love this episode. There was, you know, we pretty much said meat and potatoes to see Norman's freak. Actually, you know, we talk about Norman, Nestor talked about Vera's performance, but Freddie Highmore, I mean, from that freak out in the opening moments to that impersonation, you know, him channeling Norma.
That was a spot on Vera Farmiga. He had the mannerisms down. Mm-hmm. He had the voice inflections down.
Yeah.
He had every head tilt, every little movement. It was really, really great.
And I love seeing, it was a really quick scene and it wasn't too much about Romero, but I loved seeing Romero fight back finally.
Oh, that was my favorite.
So seeing him do that. And I think also, this episode draws into question again the relationship between Norma and Caleb for me, because there still seem to be a lot of questions. There seem to be a lot of little hints and little, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it in detail as much as we can, but I'm still unsure exactly, as you know, was she raped by him? Was Caleb really a bad person? We started thinking maybe he was last week, just the way he was so intense, but now I'm starting to think maybe not so much.
Well, this episode, they definitely romanticized that a little bit.
Yeah.
Like when you get to the scene with Caleb crying and then it cuts to Norma crying on the bed. Like, that was a beautiful transition.
And the flashback, too, just seemed very,
very nurturing and very protective.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that maybe her closing off Caleb, you know, closing off Caleb emotionally is what led to her closing off everybody emotionally. Norma really tries to reinvent herself this episode. This was such a good episode. You see Norma reinventing herself. You see Norman cracking. You see Dylan really playing off of, I think that Dylan was the perfect supporting character in all of those scenes together, because you don't want to, like, you know, be overbearing.
Yep.
And then, of course, you see Romero's scene, which was just the icing on the cake. It was short and quick, just a couple of scenes with Romero, but holy crap, they were so good.
They're amazing. So let's get into these. We're going to pack them one by one if we can. Let's start with the Norman storyline. Let's start with that first, beginning to end. So, like I said, we had the freak out, which was incredible. And then we begin to see, as Carlton Cuse warned us, we begin to see Norman sort of like, I think this is one of the first times we have a deep view inside of Norman's blackouts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've seen him, we've seen Mother Norma appear and him talk to Mother Norma. But this is the first time where we know as the audience that Norman is out. He's either asleep or out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see what's happening in his head. And what's happening in his head is a real blur of reality. He's having some real issues. And I think the way that they sort of were able to articulate that on screen was masterful.
Yeah, I mean, and really artistic and not overdone.
Not overdone, very masterful. They started with that thing with him going into Norma's room, sort of waking up, Mother, where are you? Mother, where are you? Which is sort of, you know, this, you get an internal battle of what's happening in his brain. This is this psychic break he's going to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's in one of his comatose blackouts in real life with Emma, you know, sitting there watching over him asleep. But in his mind, he's off searching for his mother, searching for this persona. Now he gets into that room and he's explaining to me what's happening in there. There was like butterflies and there was wind and there was like a
crack. It was moths.
Moths. Tell me what happened in that room. Anyone.
Well, I mean, what it seemed like is his world is cracking. That's his mother's room
crumbling.
And it's falling apart. It's totally crumbling apart. You know, you see the lights explode, you see the wall starting to come apart and the moths, you know, it's just, and even the second dream sequence we saw with him in the taxidermy scene with the bird, I feel like things are falling apart and he's trying to fix them and keep them, he's trying to control them
right.
in a certain way. That's the way I see it. Go ahead,
Joe. Remind me of something. that dog is dead, right?
Dead.
Yeah,
yes, dog's
dead.
Dog, he stuffed that dog,
right? Stuffed, hanging out in his room. We referenced that dog 1,000 times sitting in his room. The only thing he has in his room is a lampshade and that dog.
He's been talking to his mom for the past. He's been talking to an imaginary mother for the past season or two. I mean, we can have the dog come back in a
minute. No, but I
just want to confirm.
Okay.
Well, is that. Now, I have a question. That wasn't. That scene with him taxiderming the. Was it a crow?
Yeah.
Whatever it was. That wasn't him dreaming, though, right? That was him actually trying to cut the crow. And he was just having these, like, delusions in his head, like, thinking that the crow was dead. Now it's alive. Now
this is exactly. This is his him trying to struggle with. This is that is to illustrate how he's not able to make the line between what is real and what his visions are. So we talked about, like, he sees, you know, Norma, and he remembers her. Like, I talked to her. I told her about you and Kayla.
Yeah.
But he remembers it because that's real to him.
Yes.
And so then after a while, he can determine, oh, my God, that must have been a blackout, and this must be real. Now, that line is blurred. So as he's actually doing his taxidermy and the crow's coming to life, he's like, well, that's impossible. Like, it's dead.
And this is what we were seeing, I think, even a little bit from season one, and when we were contemplating what's real and what isn't.
Right.
So this is finally now we're definitely seeing, you know, his reality.
Yeah.
His perception.
Well, it's a blend because he's trying to, the crow's coming to life. And like you say, he's trying to put it together. The dog's back. He's shushing it. Like, not even thinking, like, you're dead. It's like, it's his world. This is the world of the inside the mind of Norman Bates, which is for him, the real world and both. And poor Dylan is like, Norman, you know, trying to figure this whole thing out. So we see him go down that road. Again, I love the portrayal of, like, seeing some of the catatonic Norman and Dylan and Emma trying to figure out what to do or how to handle this. Do we wake him up? Do we leave him alone?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so finally we get through all that, and then we get the money scene, the money shot, if you will, of him, Dylan come around the corner, and there's Norma. Full Norma, cooking breakfast, doing the whole thing, and the look on Dylan's face was priceless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
absolutely priceless. I mean, Joe, that has to be your favorite scene.
You know what? It was interesting to me to see the two things that were going on with the Norma persona, like the idea that she that car. We've talked about the car a million times. She sells the car. We've talked about her wardrobe a million times. She's getting rid of her wardrobe now. She's adopting this Forever 21 wardrobe, and right with that streetwalker jacket. And then out she goes. And then in the meantime, Norman is picking it up and putting it on. I'm going to take this 1959 chiffon whatever, and I'm going to make breakfast for everybody.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy. The idea is that I love it that television is making, that they're playing with this, that it's not just, hey, here's a storyline. It's like, let's have some symbology. It's fun.
Symbology?
Creating a word there?
Is that in the Webster? Symbology? Is that Popeye?
That?
Symbology?
Is that like truthiness? Symbology.
Did I say something wrong?
No, Joe. I'm just giving you.
Did you say something right?
Busting your balls, as you Italians say.
not with an accent.
No. So yeah,
I can't even be there to defend myself.
I know you're fine. You're fine. So yeah, that was that. We see Norman, like, it's the loss. He's compensating for the loss of his mother emotionally by taking on the persona entirely. We saw the transition until it's fully happened. And we surprised at all that Dylan just sort of let it go, that he didn't give him the, Norman, what are you doing?
I don't think Dylan knew what to do. I think, again, it's like, even though Dylan did get a good shot at him at the beginning to stop his rage, I don't think Dylan really knows what else to do with Norman. You know, Norman has attacked him before.
Sure.
And I think Norma and Dylan are both a bit frightened of his blackouts, because they don't know what he's, you know, at least Norma has an idea what he's capable of, but you never know.
He was chucking plates at the beginning of the episode.
I think that
on some level, Dylan was just happy that he wasn't so angry, and he's like, sure, I'll go along with this. You want to make me breakfast and I'll get the blackberries for you. That's fine. It's just, you know. Yeah, but I thought the way that he played it was really good. He's like, all right. But I love the scene with Dylan and Norman in the bed. I think that was kind of a pivotal scene when Norman says to Dylan, you know, she's not coming back. You don't know her like I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
amazing.
And he also says, once again, I feel outside of my body. Something that his mother told him to do when he was experiencing something that was too much for him to handle.
Right.
So I think it was, I don't know,
I think that was just an incredible
last thing about the whole you know, Norman playing Norma scene, you know, at breakfast is, I think it, and it comes into play when we talk, if we talk about Dylan and Emma, it's again that strive for normalcy. It's that strive for having a very, you know, and even like Norman, us seeing him watching all those old black and white photos and seeing, even when we're in season one, we're talking about the era that happens in that house. It just feels so like 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole breakfast scene, I guess that, for lack of a better word, I guess, yeah, Norma, in quote, air quotes, making breakfast, mm-hmm. It was a very typical Donna Reed-esque type of scene. Like what, you know, what even Norma wants, you know, life to be like,
exactly.
Herself. And again, it's him striving for normalcy, just like we hear later on with Dylan and Emma, how they want to belong, be a part of the family too.
Yeah.
It's all of them striving to get that perfect, to feel like they're in the perfect relationship, in the perfect mm-hmm. family.
Well, isn't it funny? Do you remember a few episodes ago when Norma was sitting in the therapist's office, not the teacher therapist, but the therapist's office, and he asks her about her mother, and her memory of her mother was like cooking breakfast.
Yep. Mm.
And so it's interesting that the first scene that we see of Norman as the mother Norma persona is her cooking breakfast.
Yeah, interesting.
And where we see a lot happens in the kitchen. A lot, you know, with the whole Bates sort of, you know, family happens in that kitchen. So.
Well, don't forget, Norman sends Norma to the kitchen a couple episodes ago when he's being interviewed by Romero.
Yeah. where she remains in the kitchen. So let's shift off of Norman, because that was fantastic. And then let's get into Norma, because we saw this was as Nestor teased to us, this was a great Vera Farmiga performance and a great Vera Farmiga episode. We saw the full range from, you know, anger to sexy to a little bit of comedy to crazy. Like, she did the whole, it's like a one-woman show.
Yeah, it really was.
It's definitely a tour de force. I mean, Flippo, right? I mean, you, this is your girl doing what she does best.
I think she's good at the acting. I think she wins it. We should give her the prize. I love the idea conceptually too, like the idea of just shedding your skin, and you can do it in one night.
Right.
You've got this car that it's come to define you, and we've talked about it over and over again. All the dings and all the bangs and every little thing, and it's always been, for the most part, anyway, it's been reflective of what the town has done to her and what she's done to herself.
Absolutely. Yeah. The car is a personification of what's gone on with Norma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In every sense of the word.
So her frustration hitting the sign, the guy running her off the road, all the little things that have happened to that car have all been, you know, symbolic of the town attacking her, her attacking the town, and she's, you know what, I'm done with it. You take it, I don't want it. I'll take the red Mustang. That's great. And ditching the Norma outfit, that total out of time, out of place outfit that she always puts herself in, and it's overnight, boom, she's a single lady, she's ditched
that streetwalker outfit. You know, that pretty much was a streetwalker outfit that she looked like she was wearing. She was definitely trying to look a lot younger.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. So, you know, Norman actually called this and said this is kind of what she does. She restarted and reset her life a couple of times. Norman, who knows her better than anyone, like, I know her, she's gonna go restart her life, and that's exactly what she went to do. And to see her sort of driving through, and I love, there's a couple of kind of, I don't want to say Easter eggy things, but there are really some cool things. I like the her iPhone, if you notice, her picture was a full face picture of Norman, which is not, which is, you know, like, it's just Norman's face. It's her screensaver, but is there a lock screen? But so all these calls are going through, and then she takes the phone off and does a very logical thing. She pulls out her gun and shoots the phone, as you should do. It's
very logical.
Totally normal.
It's totally Norma. moment. She goes off. She then, you know, goes into town, you know, buys a new outfit, as we talked about, gets herself in what we're calling the streetwalker garb, which she thinks is sexy and new, but what we all look at is kind of cheap and weird.
Well, it's kind of the way, I mean, if you think about the way a 16-year-old girl would want to reinvent herself.
Right.
Or like a young woman, like, she has, you know, she's going through all of these, she's a runner, she runs away from her issues. That's why now she's so crazy,
right?
Because she doesn't process anything, so now she's just, you know, hitting that reset button, but she still has that mentality of kind of like a young girl in a lot of ways.
And to a certain extent, I believe that this whole, you know, to that point, something we haven't really talked about, this whole like 1950s sort of persona, the pearls and the dress, I feel like that's Norma's idea of what a mother should be. Like, it's that mm-hmm. old Barbara Billingsley, Leave It to Beaver, like, yep. like she's inventing this persona, like, I'm gonna go, I'm gonna be a mother to my sons, and I'm gonna cook in the kitchen, and I'm gonna wear the pearls, and this is what I'm gonna be. And then when she leaves that, she's like, I'm gonna go be a hot chick. I'm gonna yeah. wear this thing. I'm gonna wear this. I'm gonna drive a convertible. But the other interesting Easter egg is that the very small thing, but the when she traded in the car is very reminiscent of Psycho. The scene in Psycho where she goes and has the exact same, like, she's on the run. Yep. She talks to the guy, like, I just want to trade this thing in. Mm-hmm. The sort of sleazy salesman comes up. It was very much.
That's really funny that you said that, because as she's driving and crying at the beginning, that's also kind of reminiscent, like, of, oh my goodness, I cannot remember her name.
I'm going blank right now. But,
the woman in Psycho running yes. away, and it's, you know, raining outside, and she pulls over to Bates Motel just because she needs to, you know, a place to stay for the night.
Marion Crane, of yes. course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Marion Marion Crane running away in the rain, and mm-hmm. then the car, very missing that. Marion Crane going to the used car dealer and then pressuring him, like mm-hmm. in Cycle, the line is like, first time the salesperson's ever been pressured, like he says something like that. And that was very much like, just trade my car in.
Yeah,
I thought that was kind of a cool little moment. We see her have that interesting, you know, moment with the guy at the bar, where she kind of wants something, but she doesn't, and she, you know,
just kind of wants to make believe. She's trying to reinvent herself. First of all, she's more Norma Louise Calhoun, so she's yes. changed her name back. Second of all, she's drunk and leaning over him, and she's like, "Hey, I, you know, ran away from my ran. I ran left to get the altar today.
Right.
You know, completely just making up these stories.
Is she making up these stories? Because I was wondering about that. I feel like there's a reason why she's saying those specific stories.
Well, that's kind of interesting that you said that, Nando, because it wasn't until season one, episode six, when we watched the episode The Truth, that we realized that it was Norman that killed his father.
Right.
But during that dance with the guy, she said that she killed her husband.
Yeah.
Now, no. What did that mean? Was she drunk? Was she making it up? Are these things that she was letting slip?
I don't know. Maybe she's drunk and she's just sort of like, I have no idea. I thought the same thing. Like, is she like trying to invent a persona? I mean, we know that Norman is a killer, so I don't think I don't think that was a reveal.
How do we know that though? We know that because Norma told Dylan. That's the only way that we know that.
Right. But didn't we see a flashback of that?
Yeah, it was Norma telling the story to Dylan because Dylan wanted to take Norman.
Fair enough.
We had this exact same conversation because I listened to the podcast on the way here.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I was sitting there and I was like, well, did Norman? Like, are they going to bring this up again?
Yeah, interesting.
But you know, interesting about the whole wedding thing, because I just feel like that was really out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
And when she talks to you know, the professor, the adjunct later on, she talks about
which we all saw coming. Like, yes. Just before giving that, we should say that after a kerfuffle with the guy in the bar, she finally makes the call to the psychiatrist, as we all saw coming. He, of course, takes her in, and they begin to have a session, and then they have a session. You know what I'm saying?
Full session,
but
if you will.
You know, when she's talking to him and she's sharing information, and she says the exact same thing to both people. Oh, don't even listen to what I've been talking about for the past hour. I'm just drunk. She says mm-hmm. the same exact thing, which makes me feel like they're both very similar speeches. Hmm. She says to the guy at the bar that she ran out of her wedding. He was a nice guy. I have a problem with commitment. And the way she talks about Caleb to, you know, when she's with the professor mm-hmm. is kind of like, my kids want me to see my brother, and he was mean to me when we were growing up. Mm-hmm. And she totally just made it sound like it was just a little tiff between two people.
And based on
that very nurturing flashback, that draws into question, like, what was this relationship like?
Mm-hmm.
And was she running?
Well, it sounds like,
yeah,
if we can accept that Caleb is a relatively reliable narrator, then it sounds like at one point or another it was consensual, and then she stopped. It stopped being consensual, and he wanted it to continue.
Yeah, if we believe Caleb's version, yes.
Yeah, but yeah. I just can't help but feel that Norma definitely seems to have a little more guilt at this than when we seem to believe, based mm-hmm. on her conversation at the bar. I just feel like that there's a connection there. I'm not sure exactly what but I think there is.
I really like what you said about her, like, being this is what a 16-year-old girl would do mm-hmm. if she was reinventing herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so accurate, because the stories that are just, I mean, I, you know, there may be some basis for her, which she made up to the guy in the bar, but I kind of feel like it was just stuff that she made up. I kind of feel like she was just having a good time and just kind of, you know, trying to start something, trying to create something.
Or the
trying to, you know, like creating a persona.
Or the similarity. Oh, sorry, honey. Go ahead.
No, go for it. She ran away from it when it got to a place where it was going to be, you know, when the music and the lights and all the nice stuff that made the bar, you know, a warm, cozy atmosphere were gone, and we're out in the car with the guy, and you know, you can put your head in his lap, and then all the fun was over. Mm-hmm. So she didn't want to play anymore.
Well, it's interesting what the similarities between Norma and Norman are, and it's like they use this as their coping mechanism, almost reinventing. Like, Norman is going to become his mother, and she's going to become somebody else. So maybe it is. Like, maybe we're just reading too much into it.
Yeah.
Maybe this is just her being somebody totally different to get outside of her body.
Well, and also I think that, you know, the progress she made initially with my man, Dr. Feelgood, my man, the doctor.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. No, it, like, you know, like I said, she started off with sort of like very dismissively, oh, I got an argument with my son and this happened. But then she spilled it. She spilled the beans on Norman. Like, this is what's going mm-hmm. on. And she got really, really vulnerable and really real.
Loved the way she broke down as
yeah.
well. That seemed so genuine.
It's
that, like, hyperventilating.
Genuine.
Like, it's so much to deal with. I can't even control my breath.
Right. And then the fact where he's like, okay, let me, again, you get more of an insight into Norman, the way she operates. She's completely breaking down. She's admitting she's breaking down. She's completely vulnerable. He runs outside and grabs her and says, I'm like, I can't let you leave. And she starts like wanting to kiss him, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I can't do this. I can lose my license. And she's doing her normal, like, shut up. Who cares?
Yeah.
It just makes me feel about, like, that's maybe how the relationship with Caleb maybe started in the moments of, like, you know, being super terrified and super afraid mm-hmm. to pulling that person close to them and everything else be damned until there's a moment of clarity, like, oh shit, I can't do this.
Yeah.
You know, which is what happened with the doctor the next morning. Like, yeah, I've got to go take care of my sons and be a mother because this is what mothers mm-hmm. do.
But that's interesting that she did return. Because I thought that Norman was right, but she did return. She's like, I'm a mother now. I've got to go talk. Like, I don't, like, this. It's funny because as it seemed like the session worked.
The session worked, but it was an interesting, you know, I don't know. It's like a trade-off, right? So she traded off whatever emotion she was feeling and vulnerability she was feeling in the moment to have sex with this guy who clearly didn't want to but wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And in the morning, he was like, hey, Norma, let's... She's like, nope, see you later, buddy. I'm out of here.
And let's not gloss over the fact, you know, that she confessed to him.
Yeah.
She told him that Norman killed her husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so that's a pretty big reveal to lay down.
And ethically, I mean, well, he's already crossed all kinds of lines ethically. But,
yeah.
You know, ethically, if she's going to hurt herself or someone else, he has to report it. If he reports, you know, I don't know where that falls in patient-client confidentiality. I don't know if you know, Flippo, but, like, I know that if you say, I'm going to hurt myself or someone else, they have to do something.
Yeah.
If you say, oh, by the way, my son killed somebody, does that fall within the thing or does he have to report that ethically? I mean, he already had sex with her, so.
That's a question for someone who knows a heck of a lot more than I do.
Oh, that's, which is everything.
I would imagine. I would imagine it's kind of a mushy thing. I would imagine that there's probably quite a bit of leeway on that, one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would be up to a doctor's judgment.
Well, I'm wondering if that'll be something that'll come back when, like, he's like, look, Norma, I had to report it. It's
well,
my
then,
job.
Wouldn't she then report the fact that they slept together?
Sure.
It's like they kind of both have dirt on each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, so, but we
good. That's good.
Yeah. but I forget the line she says, which was a very funny line, something of like, I have to go and I don't want to. Something like, I don't want to, but my sons want me to. I forget what the line she said to him. Something about like, I don't want to do this, but that's what mothers do.
Yeah,
that's what mothers do.
Yeah.
But it was a ridiculous statement. It's like, I don't want to go admit that I was raped. But that's what mothers do. Or something like that.
Well, she didn't say that, but I love the way she broke down the giving tree.
That was perfect.
Yeah, it was just so awesome. Then the tree becomes a stump, and that's what mothers are.
Yeah, that's what being a parent
is. That's what being a parent is.
It was perfect. It was that was really, really good.
Yeah.
That was good stuff. So then she goes back and has that, you know, goes back and sees the boys, and Norman seems to snap out of whatever he's snapping out of. She's like, let's go.
No, she's back.
They go up to the farm. They have the moment. And then, you know, just some top gun acting by Dylan, too, because Dylan's had some really good sort of like really emotional looks on his face, you know, lately. Like, with that moment, and also a great Kenny Johnson moment and a great Vera Farmiga moment where he apologizes and apologizes and breaks down his knees and cries. Everything I said last week about, he's a liar, I don't believe him, like, it went out the window. Kenny Johnson won me over. I believed him because he was so sincere, and they hugged each other and embraced, and then they pan over to poor Dylan, and he's like, my mother and my father, we've done it.
Yeah,
and everyone's crying.
Playing off the look, as Nestor said, it's like a lot of times that they'll cut dialogue and let it play off the look, and I think it's working.
It's working, because that was a perfect example of playing off the look, because you had the look on Kenny's face, and I believed him. Vera finally broke down, and I was sincere. Dylan was like, my family, and we panned to Norman. He's giving me the Norman Bates, the psycho smile.
Making you think that Mother Norma is going to end up killing Caleb. That all of the anger that Norma had, who's no longer Norma, because now Norma is this like 16-year-old hooker girl, is now gone to Norman, or the Mother Norma persona.
And let's not forget that Norman, every time that Norman mentions Caleb, like, he's so angry, like, he raped her. Like, so all of that, whatever Norma was saying about Caleb, Norma's now absorbed it. So even if Norma is capable of forgiving and moving on, Mother Norma doesn't forget shit.
Yeah.
You know, Mother Norma's like, that guy raped me, and he's going to get it.
I like that you use the word absorbed, because that really is. It's like Norman is kind of like a sponge, and all of this stuff that he's been absorbing, all of this like insanity he's been absorbing from his mother is now going to be...
Even normal people, they get a lot from their parents.
Yep.
Two quick things we've touched on really quickly. I do want to touch on the Dylan Emma thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Emma really had some nice moments there as well, revealing that she really wants to be part of this family in one way or another. And it feels like there's a weird moment there where she's really desperately wanting to be part of the family. She's wanting, and you've seen that she's wanted Norma to sort of like, she's looked up to Norma, wanted to be embraced by Norma. She's done everything she could to sort of get close to Norman. Mm-hmm. But now it's almost like, well, Norman's crazy. Norma's crazy. How about you, Dylan? There's almost a sense of like, well, maybe you're the one.
Well, and they also have a kinship, because they both have been vying to get into this family for a very long time.
They're both outsiders looking in. Like Norman and Norma's bond is so strong, it's hard to break that click. Yeah. That's a very exclusive club, the Norman and Norma club.
Yeah.
Dylan's not invited in. Emma's not invited in. So they do feel very much like they're outside. Flippo, have you ever tried that trick in high school, the old cup your hands and beat on the girl's chest trick? Is that one of your moves?
that was neat, you know. And I expected him to kind of, well, what am I trying to say? I expect him to become, once again, I expect for Dylan to kind of swoop on Norman's girl by accident.
Right.
It's almost like he doesn't have a choice. Like, this is, I'm the closest thing to Norma in this town.
Right.
And, it was kind of cool. Like, you know, it's such a goofy idea, but it kind of became like this moment of fun for them. Like, they were, you know, and this moment of like fun, normal thing where, and this is something we can actually fix also. Like, there is a remedy for this. We bang on your chest, you spit out the phlegm, fixable. Norman, catatonic in the other room, thinks he's mom, not fixable.
Sure. That is something, you're right, that's a good point. It's something tangible they can handle. So let's, before we get out of here, we have to touch on Sheriff Romero.
I've actually got to jump off now. I love you guys. We'll talk soon.
Goodbye.
Yes, yes.
Joe, look at that, in and out. Okay, so we got to touch on Sheriff Romero, because, you know, I mentioned at the end of our, casually at the end of our conversation last week, that like this whole thing with him and, what's my brother's name?
Marcus.
With him and Marcus backslapping and kind of giving them moves. Yeah. I'm like, how long is Sheriff Murray going to put up with one more backslap?
I can't believe that. Like, I can't believe that Nestor couldn't say it. Like, it's got to be so hard for an actor to do these interviews again and again and, like, not be able to say anything, because this was my, like, everything aside, this was my favorite part of the episode.
It was such a jaw drop moment and such a cheer. Like, I cheered out loud. I was like, Romero!
Yes.
Yeah! Now, it was like, Romero is not taking any shits.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, if we could back up for just a moment. So the scene with Marcus and Romero in the hospital bed, when Marcus was pretty much kind of, you know, extending some type of olive branch, if you will, I was thinking, okay, I was like, this is, Romero's going to play it. She's shot. He's going to, you know, be friends with Marcus and lay low until he makes his move. And he's like, all right, let me think about that. Thank you for the offer. I totally thought, I did not think that he, like, it just made me, it put Romero on a whole nother level for me. It's like, you do not back him into a corner. You do not mess, with him.
Don't mess with Romero. That's what I learned. I do like the way, like you said, what's great about that is, you know, Marcus has always kind of come with this very, you know, he's been dropping hints and being kind of threatening and being kind of arrogant, but also in a very subtle way with the back slaps and with the, hey, it's going to be my office soon. Yeah. All right, buddy. His demeanor was the exact same in the hospital room. Like, mm-hmm. man, you know, he wants you dead, but I think you're more valuable alive. And so, listen, let me know. We'll proceed one way or the other, buddy.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I'm out of here. Yeah. I'm just Marcus.
Just willing to do you this favor.
He's just incredibly arrogant of him the whole time. Just walking into the police station before and just, thinking he owns the place because of Bob Harris. And now, you know.
But you would think the response to that would be like, okay, this guy is like, let me outmaneuver this guy. Mm-hmm. Even though he's threatening me, he's being so calm and sort of arrogant about it.
Yeah.
The move is to sort of give him a look and give him another, you know, like very clever line back or another like one-liner back. And, and so the fact that he goes down and slams in his window and then just shoots him B was like, oh.
Yeah. Pushes him aside, wipes a little blood off of the windshield, and he's off.
And he bones out. Because that was a full-blown threat. That was like, we'll proceed one way or the other. And I was like, ooh, Marcus, you just threatened Sheriff Romero. Let's see what happens there. Did not expect that.
Yeah, it was and it's just, it's so funny because in that moment, I saw a little bit of Norma in Romero.
Huh.
You know, the way it just like completely like reactive, emotional, like, it was. And, you know, I love the fact that the first person that he called in the hospital, he's like, give me my phone, get out of here. It was Norma.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, you're in danger.
Mm-hmm. That's because he wants a little bit of Romero and Norma, if you know what I mean.
Ayo.
Anyway, no, that was Nando nothing. Okay. All right.
Nothing. So,
all right.
Crickets from here.
So that was all great. Again, I'll just reiterate before we get out of here is that like, you know, the show White Pine Bay, the drama, I'd watch that drama.
Yep.
Bates Motel is great. I love everything around the Psycho universe, but let's just say the Psycho universe was completely lifted out of this and put somewhere else. White Pine Bay is pretty dope. Like with the Sheriff Romero and Bob and this and the intrigue and the pot. That's a good show.
I mean,
they did a very good job with like sort of filling out this Psycho universe.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get out of here, unfortunately, because we got to go see our girl Vera Farmiga, but let's jump into some predictions.
And now, you're after Buzz TV predictions.
Do it, Casey.
You know, I know that you thought that your prediction was wrong, Joe, but I, for some reason, don't think that it is. I think that we still will see the other shoe drop with Caleb.
Yeah.
I like that prediction. I do think that Mother Norma Persona will obviously be the one. There was actually a prediction on Twitter, and I'm not sure who left it, but it was a really great prediction saying that the Mother Norma Persona will try and kill Caleb, but there will be something will go wrong and he'll accidentally kill Dylan.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I thought that was a great prediction.
Ooh, yeah, I thought Dylan was going to be the guy, but that makes sense because Dylan's got to go too. You know, Dylan is not a part of the Psycho universe as we know it.
Yep.
So, you know, he's got to go too.
But do you think something might happen between him and Emma before that, though? Based on what they kind of set up this episode, maybe?
Well, I don't think that anything's going to happen between them only because Dylan would never do that to destroy his family.
Right.
You know?
Hmm.
Just the same thing with Bradley.
Nando prediction?
Well, yeah, we haven't seen her yet either. That's true.
She's coming back. There are like four episodes left. She's got to be back.
She's got to be back sooner rather than later. I think I like that prediction from the internet. I don't want to go with that one, of course. Obviously, I think Romero's going to be saving Norma, and there's going to be definitely a meeting between him and the professor. So,
I think Romero's going to be, if you guys are familiar with the 70s movie Walking Tall, maybe even the remake with The Rock, that's, you know, Romero's in full vigilante, I'm taking back my town, cleaning this town out mode.
Yeah.
Romero's going to go full Romero.
This is the episode that Nestor said that we were going to learn a lot about his motivations throughout the series and you know, what he's about.
So does that mean that he's going to end it all, like end everything with Bob Paris? And everything with, you know, because there was that henchman following Norma the whole episode.
Yes, which we didn't touch on, so we'll see.
I mean,
well, we'll see, but it's also so many episodes left to end that cycle,
right?
To end those guys too. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
One quick question: Did Marcus shoot Romero, or did the henchman shoot Romero? Marcus or the henchman?
Henchman.
All right.
Yeah.
I thought maybe Marcus, but okay.
No. I think it was a henchman for sure, yeah. Or maybe Bob himself.
Thank
but
you
he, for... I don't think he gets his hands dirty.
No, he doesn't. He's too busy, like, watching people have sex. he's the president of the Arcanum Club.
Nice.
Thank you for joining us for the Bates Motel After Show and After Buzz Television. We are very excited about this season. Thank you for listening on iTunes, and thank you for watching us on YouTube. You can find Joe Flippo at Joe Flippo on the Twitters and at josephsanfilippo.com and Dua.
Hi, yes, Dua, at Dua Casey. And go on my Twitter page because there's actually some fun stuff. Nestor is doing a tour of the Bates Motel and the set. Go on my Twitter page. I have all the information of how to access it. It's tomorrow at 12:30 Eastern cool. Standard Time at Dua Casey, DuaKaissi.
And we're actually doing a tour of the Bates Motel, and Joe kind of alluded to the fact that we might be seeing Vera today. We got invited over to Universal Studios Hollywood. Thank you, Universal. And thank you, Universal Television, for inviting us. And we're hopefully going to get to meet with Vera and Carlton and Carrie, the executive producers of the show. And we'll hopefully be tweeting that stuff out. You can find me on Twitter at Nandovel, N-A-N-D-O-V-E-L. And like I said, tune in this week. Maybe we'll have some stuff on Twitter. Some exciting
stuff.
And
I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. It's been an absolute pleasure. Definitely we'll put some pictures up on Instagram of today if we get there. Thank you very much, guys. We'll see you next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.